We're doing Nehemiah. We're up to what they call the 12th chapter, the 43rd pasuk. Vayizbichu v'yom ahu zevachim gedolim. So they had all agreed to this pact. They had all come and designated the walls of Jerusalem, and now they offered sacrifices and they celebrated. Ke'elokim simcham simcha gedolah. Hashem had given them this great cause for rejoicing. Here they had succeeded in building the walls. They had a Beit HaMikdash. They had the backing of the Persian king. They had a lot of blessings. V'gam anashim v'ayladim samechu. The women and children were also happy. V'tishma simchat Yerushalayim merachok. From far away, you could hear the rejoicing that was going on in Jerusalem. V'yipaktu v'yomu anashim al anshachot. And people were given responsibility on that day to take control of the different parlors. How do they translate nishachot in your translations? There were the different rooms that would store chambers. Great, that's the word, chambers. La'otzarot, la'tumot, la'rishit, la'masrot. The different donations that were in the Beit HaMikdash, lichnos bahim. They would gather in them, listei harim in ota Torah, la'kohanim, v'la'leviim. So they appointed treasurers that were responsible for collecting the different donations that came to the Beit HaMikdash, and from the different cities they brought gifts that the Torah commands, gifts that are given to the Kohanim, gifts that are given to the Levim, Truma, Maisros, Lichno Aram, Kisimchat Yehuda LaKohanim VaLeviim HaOmdim, because the happiness of Judea was over the Kohanim and the Levites, and they were celebrating the Beit HaMikdash. They realized in order for the Beit HaMikdash to work, the Kohanim and the Levites have to be taken care of. And this is something that people forget. People want to come to shul, and the shul should be ready. People want to come to shul, and the Sefer Torah should be in the right place. The shul should be clean. We expect that our religious services will be taken care of. But when do we ever come and say, let me paint the shul? The shul needs to be painted. Let me make sure the shul is clean. Before I leave, I'll collect all the sidurim. You walk into shul, you want to see a neat shul. Well, every person has to see a responsibility to take care of it. What the pasuk is saying is an obvious thing is not at all obvious. The pasuk is saying the people recognized that their celebration of Judea revolved around the Kohanim and the Levim, so they were meticulous in paying their dues to the Kohanim and Levim so that the Kohanim and Levim could succeed in establishing the Beit HaMikdash. And now, if we want to compare this to modern history, this is what happened 150 years ago when the Jews started making aliyah to Israel. So Jews from all over the world would send their donations to help fund the Jews in Israel. Everyone wanted a Jewish establishment in Israel. Yes state, no state, forget that. But the idea that Jews should live here, everyone wanted that. The idea that we should have a Jewish presence and slowly rebuild the Jewish presence in Israel, almost everyone wanted that, right? Not everyone, almost everyone believed in that. So the Jews from all over the world funded that. So that's what was happening here with the Kohanim and the Levim. That everyone realized our celebration over Jerusalem and the Beit HaMikdash is really a celebration of them establishing the Beit HaMikdash. Let's make sure we pay our dues. Now here again, if we take this to our own lives, people sometimes are negligent in paying tuition. People sometimes are negligent in paying their dues to the shul or the Beis Medrash. You want it to function. You want to be able to have an education system for your kids. People will say, I'm going on vacation to Hawaii. I don't have money to pay tuition. Wait a second, but how are your kids going to be educated if you don't pay your tuition? I'm saying there's a concept here that's unusual. People very often overlook the need to fund the religious institutions that take care of their kids or that take care of all of society. The pasuk here is telling us a very unique characteristic of the time, that the people felt the responsibility to take care of the Kohanim and the Levim. Let me make sure to pay it on time. I know someone that when he makes a good business deal, he calls up his children's elementary school and he says, I want to pay 3 years worth of tuition now. So that way your cash flow will be easier. I have a better cash flow now. I just cut a big deal. Let me give you 3 years tuition for my kids. This way when you guys have to pay the rabbeim, when you have to pay your staff, you'll have the cash on hand. And right away he pays off. He sees he has the cash. He throws it to the school. And that's a big help. That's a huge help for a school. וישמרו משמרת אלוקיהם ומשמרת התורה והמשוררים והשוררים כמצוות דוד שלמה ונו. And so they set up the guards, the way we described yesterday. The 24 families were divided into, each one had their responsibility, their week, to be the Kohanim in service, the Levites in service. Kivimei David v'asaf mikedem Rashem shorerim v'shirtila v'odot lelokim. Back in the days of King David and Asaf, the Levite, they had established this order of which family would go when. And remember, we saw earlier in Ezra that they had a record, each family, where they came from. And the rabbis of the time knew this Kohen, his father, his father, his father, his father, all the way up to Aaron HaKohen. Each family knew their genealogy, their family tree. And so all of Israel was careful from the days of Zerubbabel and Ezra. They gave gifts every day to support the Levim. They gave it to the Levites gave to the Kohanim, and that's how they supported the rebuilding of the second Beit HaMikdash. It was a communal effort. So on that day, the day of the inauguration of the walls of Jerusalem, and we described how the walls of Jerusalem were critical, not only on a spiritual level, but also on a practical level. We mourn the day they were breached. We celebrate the day they were rebuilt. They were celebrating here. And so they read from the Torah. One of the things they read was that even a convert from Ammon and Moab could not marry into the Jewish people. Because they made a boycott against us. They wouldn't sell us bread and water. They hired Bilam to curse us. Hashem overturned the curse to a blessing. So when the Jews hear this being read, so they set aside. They said, Ammonites, Moabites, excuse me, you're not a part of the Jewish people. What had happened is the Ammonites and Moabites had come and mixed in with the Jews. And now as they're reading this, they said, no, I'm sorry. Now, there's a big question about what's going on here. No. The major question here is, who are we talking about? Are we talking about converts? Are we talking about non-Jews? So some of the commentaries want to say they were non-Jews. That's how Rashi goes. The way I explained that there were non-Jews from Ammon and Moab who had joined and been a part of the nation until that point, and they said, wait a second, we realize now that you're not. The problem is that the Pasuk is not talking about non-Jews. The Pasuk is talking about converts from Ammon and Moab. And the second problem is that the Mishnah says, and this is how we rule, the Mishnah says, let's leave it at that, that Ammon and Moab are lost. From the days of the first temple, from the days of the Beit HaMikdash HaRishon, when Sancheiriv came and exiled all the different nations, so we lost track. We have no idea who's an Ammonite and a Moabite. So every convert that converts into Judaism, we accept them, we embrace them, and we don't ask questions, because we say there are billions of people in the world, and we have no idea who remains from Ammon, Moab, Amalek, Mitzrayim. So everyone's welcome. If this Pasuk is talking about the converts from Ammon and Moab, so what was happening here? It says from the days of the first Beit HaMikdash, we lost track. So how did they know over here? So the Malbim suggests that even though we say it was from the confusion that ensued from Sancheiriv's mixing and matching the whole world, but this took a few generations to happen. Sancheiriv moved the people of Ammon and Moab. But when you're dealing 70 years later, so people still knew who was Ammon and Moab. When the Gemara says we don't know because of Sancheiriv, we don't know who Ammon and Moab is, what the Gemara means is the Ammonites and Moabites, they left their home territory, and over the course of the next 2-3 centuries, it was impossible to keep track of them, so they're gone, it's over. We can't keep this mitzvah, we have no idea who they are. But at this point in history, it was still close enough that even though they had migrated, it was possible to identify them, and that's what it means here. That the Jews said, wait a second, if you married a Jewish woman, you have to find yourself an Ammonite convert to marry, a Moabite convert to marry. You cannot, this is a prohibited marriage. So according to that, it was a new process where they were checking the marriages within the Jewish people, within, second pshat. I said again, the first pshat is Rashi's pshat. It's not talking about converts. It's talking about the non-Jews. The second pshat is the way the Malbim goes, this was a process of verifying which marriages were legitimate. Earlier, Eliashiv HaKohen Natun B'Lishkat Bet Elokeinu Karov LeToviya. So before this, Eliashiv the Kohen was sitting in one of the chambers, and he was next to Tuvia the Ammonite. Tuvia was a friend of Sanballat HaChorani, the arch enemy of the Jewish people, who was trying to annul the service of the Beit HaMikdash. Vayas lo lishka gedola. He made himself this big chamber. So Eliashiv makes himself this big chamber. And earlier, they had placed all the different gifts for the Kohanim and Leviim in his big room. And when this happened, what was really happening is that Eliashiv was taking all the gifts that the Jews were bringing for the Kohanim and Leviim and handing it over to Tuvia. And this is now going to be behind closed doors. This is one of the major challenges of the Second Temple era. During the period of the Second Beit HaMikdash, we will repeatedly have situations where Kohanim in the Beit HaMikdash will use the wealth of the Beit HaMikdash for their own interests, and so there's going to be a constant struggle. Who will be the Kohen Gadol? Because it meant control over a massive amount of wealth. And so the Second Temple era was plagued with this. Most of the Kohanim Gdolim of the Second Beit HaMikdash era were in it for the money. And that's why they didn't last more than a year. And so Nehemiah is recording that he wasn't around in Jerusalem when Eliashiv was giving all the wealth to Tovia, the friend of Sanballat. Ki bishnat 32 l'Artashasta mech bavel bati el ha-melech ul'ketz yamim nish'alti min ha-melech.
Where was
he? What? He says, all this time I was still out in Babylon. Remember, when they started rebuilding the second Beit HaMikdash, Ezra, Zerubbabel, they were in Israel. Nehemiah wasn't yet there. Nehemiah came when he heard that the Beit HaMikdash was under constant attack and the walls were broken down. Nehemiah came to a built Beit HaMikdash in dire straits. And he rebuilt the walls. So Nehemiah says, all those years, people were bringing donations to the Beit HaMikdash, and they were all being handed to the enemies of Israel through Tuvia. So when I came to Jerusalem, I understood the evil that was going on. That Eliashiv had mishandled the Beit HaMikdash and allowed Tuvia to make himself a chamber in the Beit HaMikdash. I was very upset by it. And so I took all of Tuvia's belongings, his table, his chair, all his pots and pans, everything he owned, and I kicked him out of that chamber. And then I said, these chambers had defiled things in them, which probably also means idols or the like. I said, purify these rooms. And then I reinstated those rooms as storage houses for the flour, for the frankincense. And I found out that all this time that they were siphoning the money, the poor Levites weren't getting paid. The poor Levites didn't have what to eat. ויברחו איש לשדה הלווים המשוררים עושי המלאכה. And because of that, the Levites had left their posts to go work fields, because the Jews were dutifully bringing the gifts, and all of it was being siphoned by Toviah. ואריב את הסגנים אמרה מדוע נעזב בית האלוקים. So I fought the people who were in charge, and I said, why are the Levites off duty? וקבצם ועמידם על עומדם. And so I gathered the Levites, and I told them, this is your post, this is your responsibility, you watch over here. וכל יהודה הביאו מסר דגן ואת ראש ויצא לאוצרות. Judea kept bringing their gifts, like they had until now. But now, the gifts were going to the right place. ואוצרה לאוצרות, and I placed over the one responsible, the treasurer of all these gifts, was Shlemiah Kohen, and Tzadok HaSofer, and Fedaya the Levite, ועל ידם חנן בן זקור בן מתניה, כי נאמנים נחשבו ועליהם לחלוק אחרי. Him. And everyone trusted them, and so they were given the responsibility to hand out the tithes that everyone brought to the Beit HaMikdash. And here again, Nehemiah says that sentence which Chazal held against him. He says, Zachir ali Elokai al zot. Hashem, remember my merits that I did this. Val temach chasadai. And don't erase my kindness, the good deeds I've done. Asher asiti bevet Elokai v'mishmarav. So even though Nehemiah did good things, Chazal said he shouldn't have spoken this way, saying, remember what a great person I've been. Now, David HaMelech also says, I'm a chassid. But our sages say, obviously, he could have said it. And Chazal say he said it as a hesitant statement. He said, am I really Hashem a chassid? בימים ההם ראיתי ביהודה דורכים גיטות בשבת. In those days, Nehemiah records, I saw that people were pressing wine on Shabbos. ומביאים ערימות ועומסים. People brought home piles of grain, and they'd make their piles on Shabbos. ועומסים על החמורים. They'd pile them up on the donkeys. ואף יין ענבים ותנים וכל מסע. They'd load the donkeys with wine and grapes and figs. And they'd carry all these different loads. Umvim Yerushalayim b'yom haShabbat. They'd bring it to Jerusalem on Shabbos. As we saw earlier, Shabbos was market day. So if you thought there was a problem with the bus service in Tel Aviv on Shabbos, you should know that in the beginning of the second Beit HaMikdash era, that was the situation in Jerusalem. Meaning, when we learn Nehemiah, it's supposed to encourage us. Where it's not supposed to make us say, oh boy, we should legitimize the buses in Jerusalem on Shabbos. No. But if there are right now places in Israel that are not yet keeping Shabbos the way we'd like, you should know that that was our history in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah as well.
This was the people that came, that were the lowlights of the
okay. Okay. But Ezra was there and he couldn't stop it. Zerubbabel was there and he couldn't stop it. It took Nehemiah, who came with the political clout, and he was able to stop it. Va'id b'yom micham tzayit. So Nehemiah warns them. And he says, you guys have to show up here on the market day of the hunters. Don't have your own market day on Shabbos. There's the hunter's market day. That's the day you show up to sell these wares as well. The people of Tzor used to come on Shabbos bringing fish and selling their wares on Shabbos. They'd sell on Shabbos to the Jews throughout Jerusalem. And Nehemiah fights with the leaders of Judea. What's this terrible thing? You're desecrating Shabbos. This is what your forefathers did. That's why the Jews have suffered so. That's why the city has suffered so. You're causing Hashem to be even more angry at us. You're desecrating Shabbos. And so Friday afternoon, as the shadows started extending, that's a sign the sun is setting. Sharei Yerushalayim lifnei Shabbat. So by the gates of Jerusalem, it was before Shabbos. Va'omerai commanded va'isagu adelatot. I said, close the gates of Jerusalem. And I ordered that they do not open the gates of Jerusalem until after Shabbat. I set my lads there to ensure that no commerce enters Jerusalem on Shabbos. So the merchants show up, the gates are closed. So what do? They slept outside the city. They figured the Jews inside the city, they became fanatical 1 week, 2 weeks, they'll give up eventually. They'll see that we're out here, they'll open the doors, they'll let us in. So Nehemiah went out and warned them. Nehemiah understands that when they're there, they're tempting the citizens. So he yelled at them and said, "Why are you sleeping outside the walls? If you continue sleeping here, then I am going to punish you." From that day on, they did not come back again on Shabbos to sell their wares. I told the Levites that they have to purify themselves and come and watch the gates and sanctify the day of Shabbos. They have to go to mikvah and then they have to come and guard the gates even before Shabbos, meaning they have to be there on guard to make sure that people don't enter from the time Shabbos comes in. So part of the Levite's job was to make sure that no one comes into the city late. You keep Shabbos, then you better get home before sundown. Don't try to walk in through the gates of the city 2 minutes before the sun sets. No. Part of respecting Shabbos is to show up early at home. Guys, remember that when you have work, when it's a wintry Shabbos and at 4:40 it's sundown and at 4 o'clock is candle lighting, don't show up at home at 3:30. You got to show up at home at 11:30. Get yourself ready. By 2:30, the whole house should be ready for Shabbos. That's what Nehemiah is doing. So Nehemiah tells the Levites, "You guys get ready and show up by the gates before sundown. And that way you will be part of sanctifying Shabbos. Hashem, you should remember this merit as well and have compassion over me as you are great in your kindness." At that time, I saw there were still Jews who had taken wives from the non-Jewish nations. Ashdod, Amon, Moab. Uvnehem chatzim daber ashdodit, v'enam mikrim daber yudit. I saw the next generation, they didn't know how to talk Hebrew correctly. V'chilshon am v'am. They spoke like the nations. So this is the verse that's quoted as to why they established our Shmona Esrei. They saw that the Jews didn't know how to talk Hebrew properly. They were saying words like tomato, telephone, electricity, are words that have nothing to do with Hebrew. People said the word sandal. Sandal is a Greek word. So people were using words that they saw they had other languages mixed in. You know, people say all kinds of words. Sabah al-Nur. People speak and they don't even realize how much of the language, Gesundheit, is not Hebrew. So this was a problem in the days of Nehemiah, and according to our sages, according to our tradition, this pasuk is indicative of why the men of the great assembly had to establish a format of prayer. Not only because people aren't always so talented to form their own prayer, not only because people don't know the system that the Torah requires to form prayer, but also because people just didn't know the language well. You're going to talk, if you're going to talk before your Creator, you have to speak correctly. Well, that involves speaking the language correctly. And here the Pasuk identifies that they did not know that. Yes?
Did these wives of Ashdod have anything to do with the city of Ashdod?
Sure. Yeah. Ashdod was very often in Jewish history a non-Jewish city. Because it's near the port, so Ashdod was very often taken over by our enemies throughout much of Jewish history. So I fought them and cursed them, says Nehemiah. Some of them I had to beat up. Some of them I had to pull their hair out. And I made them promise they better not intermarry, not from their sons to their daughters, not from their daughters to their sons, Halo al Eile Chata Shlomo Melech Israel. He said to them, this is what King Solomon did wrong. Uvagoyim Arabim Lo Haya Melech Kamo, and even though he was a great nation, Vahuv Lelokav Haya, and God loved him, Vayitneu Elokim Melech Hakol Israel, God allowed him to be king over all of Israel. Gam Oto Hechtivu Anashim Enochiyot. And you see, in the end, King Solomon fell. If he married a non-Jewish woman, it destroyed him. Velachem Anishma Lasot Et Kol Hara Gdola Hazot. Do you think that you guys can do it? You're not King Solomon. You think I'm going to give in to you? You can't do this evil thing. Limol belokeinu, to rebel against Hashem our God. Loshiv nashim nochiyot, to marry non-Jewish women. Umimnei yoyada ben neshiv hakohen gadol chatan lesan valat achorani. And here's part of his problem. The Kohen Gadol, Yoyada, was the son-in-law of Sanvalat. So Sanvalat was the enemy who was trying to destroy and murder Nehemiah. And his son-in-law was the Kohen Gadol. So Sanvalat would come to the city and say, I'm just visiting my son-in-law. V'avricheu ma'alai. Nehemiah chases him out. Zachara lahem Elokai. Nehemiah says, remember, Hashem, al gaolei ha-keuna uvrit ha-keuna ve'aleviim. Remember, Hashem, to punish them about how these Kohanim intermarried, and it was very hard for Nehemiah to stop them. They were powerful Kohanim, and they defiled the covenant of the Kohanim and Levim. Kohanim have to be more careful who they marry, and these Kohanim and Levim intermarried, as we just said. And Nehemiah says, remember God. In other words, he's asking Hashem to punish them, which is a very interesting concept. The Gemara says you're not supposed to turn to Hashem to punish other people, except for when you have no choice. It says when you have no choice, when you don't have the power to do anything, then you're allowed to. But you better be sure you have no choice, because Sarah felt she had no choice when she spoke to Avram, and our sages say she died because of that. And Avram ended up remarrying Hagar. Sarah says, God should judge between you and me, Avram. And Chazal say she shouldn't have said that. She had the rabbi shame and Aver. She could have taken Avram to be judged by them, and she didn't. V'tiyarti mikol nechav, and so I purified, says Nehemiah, I purified the Kohanim from any pagan worship. V'amida mishmarot l'kohanim l'alvim ish bimlachto. And I established watches to watch over how the Kohanim and Leviim did their service. It seems that they had brought in pagan customs into the service of the Beit HaMikdash. And so Nehemiah purifies them from those habits. And here we have the final pasuk of Nehemiah, Ulkoban Haitzim, Beitim Mezumanot Velabikurim, Zacherali Elokai Letova. And Nehemiah ensures that there's enough wood, as we saw earlier, that there's enough food brought up to the Beit HaMikdash. Everyone was given their responsibility. Nehemiah ends and asks Hashem, please remember my merits, how much I tried to establish the Beit HaMikdash to succeed. And with that, we end the book of Nehemiah. Yishar Koach. This is the first year that we actually learned the full Ezra, Nehemiah, and Daniel. Baruch Hashem. Yishar Koach. Thank you.